We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Applauding whenever they slow down an Argentina attack. Here's Almada on the move for the world champions. Now Medina pulled back here, lets it run. Messi! Oh. History in Dallas! 40 years to the day since Diego Maradona scored the hand of God. Lionel Messi scores the goal to make him the World Cup's all-time leading scorer. Wonderful moment.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today's Wednesday, June 24th. This is episode 241. I'm Gino. I'm joined by my co-hosts Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look. Join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to join our pages. Leave your comments, questions. We'll get back to you. Tonight, we take you around the world of sports. We're going to get it started with some U.S. Open talk. 2026 U.S. Open. Wyndham Clark, the winner at Shinnecock Hills. He shot a 73 on Sunday. $4.5 million purse. Kev?
Boy, that was a very, felt very anticlimactic Sunday, didn't it?
So extremely.
He goes in with a six-shot lead, playing with Scotty. Scotty doesn't get anything going with the putter at all. He was ice cold with the putter. And he shoots one over. Sam Burns, I guess, made the biggest run. He shot a 67 to get to 3-under. But, you know, it's just a matter of how far was Wyndham Clark going to back up. Because he started the day, like I said, 7-under, finished at 4-under. So, you know, he had a couple of birdies on that back nine just to get himself righted and make sure he never gave up the lead, which was a big thing. Got down to one a few times, ended at one, but every time he got to one, it seemed like he made that one big putt to get to two for a couple of holes, and back to one, up to two again, you know? So he never felt the pressure of being tied. And really, when you take a look at it, I think he won it Thursday afternoon. You know, everybody on Thursday, you know, the leads were all at minus one, minus two, you know, somewhere around there. He played the back nine first. Through 12 holes or 11 holes, he was at 2-under. 3, 4, and 5, those three holes, he went birdie, birdie, eagle. 4-under there. That got up to 6-under. And from there, he hate to say the U.S. Open, but he coasted from there. Right, Darren?
I actually thought he won it on Saturday afternoon. I thought he hit putt after putt after putt. He couldn't hit a fairway to save his life. He was scrambling the entire afternoon. I agree with you on Thursday, gave him the lead. And then on Saturday, he just hit putt after putt. And it just kind of, every time you thought he's going to falter, because you're sitting there, much like we were talking about last week about the Knicks, and, you know, you cut it to 12 at this point, cut it to 4. You're like, okay, we need to get this lead down to 3 strokes or 2 strokes. Not that I'm rooting against Wyndham Clark, though, many Long Islanders were, but I wanted to see great golf on Sunday. So, but every time, you know, he was in trouble, he hit a long putt, and nobody else seemed to be able to do it on Saturday. And it was unbelievably impressive. The one thing that really stood out to me was, you know, Rory, you know, shows his face on Saturday, all of a sudden implodes. Yep. Scotty never seems to get it together. Shows his face a little bit on Saturday, a little bit on Sunday. He's in the final pairing. Sheep and wolf's clothing, the opposite the other way. Didn't do anything. You know, Xander shows himself for a minute. Doesn't do anything on Sunday. Yeah, JT falls apart in the back nine on Saturday. Morikawa falters on Sunday. It was like nobody except for Burns, who bogeyed on 15, and basically that killed him. Yep. You know, nobody but Burns really did anything to really make a run, G. It was like, you know, you wanted to see good golf. You wanted to see Wyndham Clark play with pressure, and he had to a little bit. And listen, there was a while when it's a six-stroke lead, but there's four people on the par altogether, and you're saying, how's anyone going to catch the guy at minus six, minus seven? Right.
Listen,
and like you said, Kev, he backed up, but not enough.
Burns made up six strokes. He just couldn't. And listen, he was the only other person that had a shot at that point.
Absolutely.
You know, and listen, Wyndham Clark at one point, and you know, he's on 16. He hits that tee shot into the fescue over there. Mm-hmm. And if it's not for a freaking brilliant shot out of the fescue.
Yeah.
This could be a completely different outcome, but he hits that second shot out and puts himself in a great position. I mean, maybe Sam Burns at that point does make up the difference. He made up six shots. He left himself one shot short, but Wyndham Clark winds up winning it. He's the 23rd man to win multiple U.S. Open titles. He was the 2023 winner. Now he's the 2026 winner.
Crowd was all over him, though. I mean,
yeah.
The whole thing was rough where he did some damage. He apologized. Oakmont forgave him. It's time for the Long Island Golf fan to believe. But the Long Island Golf fan, and there's been a few pundits coming out that Long Island doesn't deserve another tournament and all this other stuff because of the way the crowd reacts. And because it's an affluent area, it won't happen like that. But the simple fact of the matter is there was no reason to attack an American on American soil because you're rooting for Scotty. It really didn't need to be that. Now, we've seen it. We've seen them where the crowd's rooting for Mickelson to catch up to somebody, and, you know, he's like a fan favorite type of thing. But never root against the other golfer like we saw the other day. Now, again, Wyndham Clark had his moments, but he apologized, and he actually handled it, I thought, great afterwards, saying, I hope to earn their respect. But my mistakes, yeah. I still apologize for. Wyndham Clark handled it like a pro, but the Long Island crowd, not really. not really good. Keegan Bradley, before I pass over to you, Kev, came out with a comment today saying, listen, the golf's popularity is growing. So now what we're getting are sports fans more than just golf fans. And sports fans that were watching the Knicks, he referenced it, and they watched the Giants. Those are the two teams he referenced, are used to going to events and being loud about who they want to root for. And this might just be the way the sport is turning, especially in a market like New York. I don't know if that's the case, but Keegan Bradley kind of came out defending the fan a little bit, which was a little surprising to me. Kev, your thoughts on the fiasco?
I thought it was ridiculous. I mean, like you said, it's another American. You know, the crowds I remember, the players I remember getting nine from the crowds were guys like Colin Montgomery.
Sergio, guys like, for you know,
I remember Long Island being brutal against Sergio because he waggled for 5 minutes before he actually took a shot. These are guys absolutely. That you felt like deserved it in some ways.
Pick on Rory for a little to go bit because Rory gets that way too. But that was about it. Not a lot.
Sure. I think Rory's more almost good-natured from the crowds, except for the Ryder Cup.
The Ryder Cup took a separate.
Ryder Cup
took a turn.
Ryder Cup's a turn. That was a little different. But in the regular tournament, you know, they're on Rory, but not to the extent that they were on, like, Sergio and Colin back in the day. But, you know, to do it to Wendell Clark. I keep thinking Wendell Clark. That's
a hell of a hockey Wyndham player. Clark. A lot of big goals in his career. Yes. I understand why you like Wendell.
Yep. To do that to Wyndham Clark, I just don't know why. Maybe Bradley made a good point there. You know, I never thought of it that way.
I didn't either until he brought it up. I was a little surprised. Jake?
Was it me or was it just – I just felt like it was really boring. It was not a great Sunday golf tournament.
You know what happened? Somebody, two guys or three guys in consideration, right? It's Wyndham Clark and you're really showing Burns. You're showing a little bit of Tom Kim because he's hanging around. You're showing a little bit of a couple of guys here and there. But usually at a U.S. Open, they're all sitting there struggling to stay above par. And it's like you're waiting for the double in the next hole that takes the guy with the lead at minus two back to even. And we never had that because Wyndham Clark kind of just putted so well all week, I thought. But I'll give you that, though. It wasn't gripping, G. I agree.
Yeah, at all, you know? Yeah.
That, and they were talking, maybe with the newer sports fans showing up, too. You know, they're talking, you can't get an Airbnb or a hotel out there. The prices are through the roof. And if you got like a more average Joe sports fan showing up, well, you can't drive out there either. So you stuck taking the Long Island Railroad. And the last train out was what? Middle of the afternoon?
Yep.
So they're leaving. I think they said Thursday or Friday. Maybe it was a Saturday, right? I forget what.
Saturday, too. Saturday, too. They all left early. But
Saturday afternoon, the leaders are out there. Before they made the turn, half the crowd's leaving to go catch the last train out of Shinnecock.
My nephew was out there on Friday, and my brother-in-law, and they're like, "Listen, there was a decent crowd, but it wasn't great." And they were there for pretty much the whole day.
Yeah, you don't think they could run in a couple of extra trains at night?
No, of course they should have. A, B,
come on.
B, it just, you know, the USGA, I actually thought the USGA was relatively fair with the course. It wasn't easy by any stretch, but it wasn't brutal where they made it impossible, which Gino would have wanted to see a little bit more of. And I'm all right with that, Gino. I get why. It's fun to watch them struggle like I do, damn it. But I get your point.
To me, they let Shinnecock be Shinnecock without having to trick it up. Shinnecock is difficult enough to play without anything special happening to it, and they made sure they kept it from getting impossible.
Mm-hmm. I have two final thoughts on it, unless you guys have something.
Three guys finished under par?
Yeah, no, they made it hard. I have two final points, and if you guys have anything else before that, you go first. Right? I'm sorry, Kev.
I have one. You know, my favorite golfer of the week, Mitchell.
Oh, he looks like a drunken friend.
That
41-29, he looks like a mess out there. He's great.
That 41-29, even par 70, round one. Shoot 70 round two, 70 round three, 70 round four. First man ever to shoot par all four rounds of U.S. Open.
It's impressive.
That's impressive to do at a U.S. Open.
He looked so – and he qualified. Like he had to go through all these steps that he wouldn't have made it. And then you see him with that, you know, he wears the visor and his hair's like standing up and he looks shot at the end. Again, it looks like he had a beer per hole in the back nine. It's freaking outstanding to watch. You feel like he's, you know, the three of us aren't big drinkers when we golf. We're mostly playing. If you have a beer, it's a big deal, maybe two. But, you know, it's not really what we do. We're bad enough. We don't need any more hindrance. But watching Keith Mitchell was hysterical. But the other point, my favorite moment of the weekend, though, in any sport actually, was what happened with I'm trying to find his name here. Hold on, give me 1 second. The amateur. Why did I blank on his name here? Hold on 1 second. It's right here. Boom, boom, boom. Anyway, I'll find it in a second. I don't know where I put it, but the simple fact, this kid got permission from the PGA to let his father, surprisingly, on Father's Day, be his caddy on the 18th hole. So his father takes over the bib. 17-year-old Miles Russell. Received permission to surprise his dad on the course of the U.S. Open. Switched caddies on the final walk-up on 18, gave his dad the bib. He did not win low amateur. Low amateur went to Jackson Coven and Ryder Cohen combined. But this kid's 17. This is a kid going from his senior year of high school to college. These other two kids are like rising seniors in college. This kid's 17, and he had that moment, which I thought was awesome.
That is awesome.
Very, very cool thing. The second thing is next year, it's my dream every year, every time it happens, we get Pebble. I get to watch West Coast golf. I get to watch golf till 10 o'clock at night. I don't have to worry about what I'm missing first thing in the morning. I'm excited. I'm really excited. PGA comes back to Bethpage in 33. I think the Open comes back to Shinnecock in 35, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see what happens with the Long Island bias. But I'm pumped about Pebble for next year, guys.
Okay.
We always like watching Pebble, though. Pebble is just one of those courses that's just fun.
It's iconic.
It certainly is.
And for only $600, we can play it.
Absolutely. It's probably higher than that now, pal. It's probably closer to 1,000.
All right, we'll head over to the NBA. NBA draft taking round two taking place right now. Round one was last night. Had a trade go down. Big trade. Kev, want to tell us about the trade? I'll let you do the honors.
There was one big trade, one other minor, well, kind of minor trade, but the big one was, of course, the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo. Not too bad there, right?
That's not bad. You could have just said Giannis, but go ahead.
Don't ever do that again.
I wanted to do that for you, just for you guys. So Greek freak and Bobby Portis to Miami in exchange for, to me, I think it's a pretty decent package here. Tyler Herro, Khalil Ware, Jaime Jaquez, Kasperis Jakerčiūnas.
Very good.
Three ones. Thank you. Three ones, a pick swap, and a two.
Yep.
I think Milwaukee did pretty damn good knowing that they had to trade Giannis.
Yeah. You know, listen, Miami goes all in now.
I think the window closed. You know, you take a look, even though he's been near MVP caliber, I saw a stat here. The last four seasons, 15 different teams have won a first-round series. The Milwaukee Bucks are not one of those 15. So, you know, at this point, he's 31, 32. They've tried different things. They had no picks. They had no cap space because they bought out
Lillard.
Lillard. Thank you.
Yep. Damon Lillard.
So they were in cap hell, no picks, no chance to rebuild, no chance to put anybody around Giannis. I think this was a good trade to set him up for the future.
Yeah, and Giannis goes – and Miami goes all in right now. They sit there and say, we're going to play Bam and we're going to play Giannis and we're going to have a really, really good squad down low and we're going to see if we could go with the two-plus superstars that we're going to have on this team. And, you know, listen, the Knicks won the title. The Knicks are the best team in the NBA right now, and yet every team out there thinks that they're vulnerable and they could be beaten. That's the way the East looks right now. You didn't feel that way against OKC coming off last year, but you feel that way a little bit about the way teams think about the Knicks this year. And we'll see what the Celtics do, and we'll see what the Sixers have done their stuff. Washington's going to try to make a jump up. And obviously, Miami made the biggest splash that we could, possibly fathom here, and that was that's what they wanted to do.
You know, as a Knicks fan, the two finalists were Miami and Boston. I'd much rather see him in Miami than Boston.
I don't want to face him in Boston. Absolutely.
I mean, Jaylen Brown would have been part of the trade. It sounds like, you know, but then you get more of the outside inside with Giannis and Tatum. Right now, Miami's still very much more of an inside type team.
But it's not. It wouldn't just be that, though, if you went to Boston. It's Boston has other players around him, where him going to Miami is basically him and Bam. And at this point, not a lot of other, great players at this point anyway. You know, they may develop some guys. They have a couple of decent players. But, at best, what do you think Miami finishes in the East? Fifth at best, sixth?
They can finish in the top three, I think. I really do. I don't think Cleveland is great. I don't think Detroit has shown anything yet, besides having a good regular season.
I don't know. I don't see them finishing unless you're telling me you get one of Giannis's best years of his career. I don't think they're finishing in the top four in the East. I just don't see it.
I know they've got a little bit more balanced schedule, but they're in the Southeast with Orlando, Charlotte, Atlanta, and Washington.
Yeah, but
they can very easily do enough to win that and get at least the top four, if not top three.
The Knicks, Boston, Cleveland, you figure Indiana comes back. You got four or five teams.
Skipping Detroit. Detroit. You're one seed. You're skipping
Detroit. No, I know. Philly. Detroit. I'm just saying Philly. I can't.
It's going to be a battle. Don't get me wrong.
No, I understand. I just can't see. I can't see Washington finishing above five at this point. That's what that was my. That's my only point at this point. Whereas if Giannis went to Boston, boom. I think that really puts them right up at the top, towards the top of the East. So,
no, I'm just saying though. When you look at it though. Is there a better two-man combo in the league than Giannis and Bam? You might be. But who? Who definitively? Probably.
If they're together, Tatum and Brown.
Tatum
and Brown are better because Brown doesn't play. Brown plays like crap when Tatum's on the court. Let's be honest. Brown becomes more invisible than Tatum.
How about Brunson and Cat?
Okay, Brunson and Cat. Listen, I'm not saying, but you can't sit there and say unequivocally that there's another twosome that's going to be superior to that twosome on any given night. You can't. They're as talented as anybody. You can say that there are players that are better, but you can't say they're dominant.
Until I see him play at least 20 games together, let me see him play 20 games, and I'll give you an assessment at that point.
Well, I think you need more than 20. You probably need 20.
But to at least answer your question, I don't love Bam to begin with. So
he's a star, though. He has the record when they let him shoot 80 shots in a game, and they keep going in the fourth quarter. He has the record, Gino.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
You broke 80, Gino.
I know. I hear you.
I'm being facetious.
I know. Kevin, what was the other trade?
They're involved in one, helping out Minnesota here. So the Nets, well, Minnesota's looking to clear cap space so they could sign.
They got the sumo.
Yeah, so they're looking on low salary, so they gave the Nets Julius Randle and their 28th pick in exchange for the Nets 33rd.
And the Bulls get Claxton.
So the Bulls, who had all sorts of cap space, get Claxton for nothing, basically, just to take him. And, you know, he's still a productive player. The Nets,
he might be better than Randle.
Basically, yeah. Nets take on $10 million more in salary to move up 5 spots in the draft. And Minnesota gets a chance to sign Dosunmu.
And he gets 5 years, 112, the rumor.
Yep.
He actually, when needed and pressed with all the injuries in Minnesota, had a couple of huge games in the second round. He kind of kept them in it for a little bit, and he showed who he was. Kid out of Illinois, hell of a player. Also had OKC, dealt Wiggins to Atlanta. There was a couple of minor things. What about Trae Young opting out of $49 million and signing 4 years, 212 in Washington?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I'll give you a hell of a lot of money if you don't win at all ever.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's a little much for him.
You think $53 million a year for 4 years is is big?
And you know, it kills me, right? Because Washington actually had the number one pick in the draft. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. I feel like they took the right player with the number one pick, so they make the right move and taking the player, and then they give freaking Trae Young this unbelievably huge contract at the same time. And I feel like it's like one step forward, half a step back.
They made the deal for him, so I guess they felt obligated to kind of hold on to him and keep him. But
yeah, I know
it's and listen, Trae Young can light it up
absolutely,
but. You don't see him as that team guy that's going to help you get over the top. And you don't see him as that leader.
No.
You know what I mean? But
yes. Listen,
5 years – I'm sorry, 4 years, $212 million with Washington, who will be better, let's be honest.
You feel like he's a 25-point-per-night score on the team that's in the play-in round.
Yeah. You're going to finish anywhere from 7 to 10. They'll probably do the same thing again this year.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's what he kind of does. The other big move, Dusty May leaving Michigan and now the coach of the Dallas Mavericks. And listen, I was a little surprised. I didn't expect Dusty May to jump ship. I honestly didn't. I thought he was just building something huge at Michigan and coming off the national title. But I guess, I conquered low major. I conquered high major. Now I'm going to go and win the NBA, but you can ask Billy Donovan that's not that easy when you've conquered high major. But you know what? Yes, Rick Pitino, not easy. Yes, John Calipari, not easy. A lot of guys have tried it. Not all of them have been successful. What do you think on this one, Jake? Or Kev, either one of you?
We'll see. I mean, like you said, the history of college coaches to the pros has not been very good. with a few exceptions.
Absolutely.
Mixed at best. I think the right? last,
yeah. I think the last
Grant
guy
Stevens
to leave
become more known as the GM than as the coach when he tried to do it. Not that he was a bad coach. He was fine. But I'm just saying that his prowess has taken him to the next level more as GM. But there have been guys that have done it, but it's not that simple.
I think the last coach to leave after a national championship was Beilein.
Yep.
Who left Michigan.
He did leave Michigan as well.
And that's right.
So you win the title at Michigan and you move to the NBA. I think that's the path, right?
Or you have the team that's the best in the country and you leave for Arizona State if you're Bill Frieder. There's always something with Michigan.
Right.
You know, but there we go. I thought that was very interesting. McCollum re-signs with Atlanta, which is not unexpected. The Knicks bring Jauer back. You know, I mean, you know, that whole thing. You know, not a lot of huge moves, but it seems like everybody's traded a second-round pick at least three times in the draft so far. So we'll find out what the hell goes on with the draft. And while we're there, G, why don't you kick us off with the draft?
So first four picks kind of went status quo. We'll talk about those first. So Washington goes A.J. DeBonta. Utah goes Darren Peterson. Memphis goes Carlos Boozer. And Chicago goes Caleb Wilson. Those were kind of the four picks that everybody had outlined as the four picks in some order. Anybody have any comments on DeBonta going number one first off? I didn't. I kind of thought he was a clear one.
I like him a lot better than Peterson.
I don't like Peterson that much. So he didn't show me a lot in college. Not that he doesn't have talent. Just he didn't show me the want to that you'd like to see out of a collegiate player.
Okay, so DeBonta won. So then Peterson goes two to Utah, and that's, I think, where everybody started having questions about whether they should have went Peterson or Boozer. Peterson, I think we all think – I think Peterson's more talented. I just think there's a lot more questions, I don't know, mentally with Peterson than anything else.
I agree.
But Peterson gets the nod. Utah goes Peterson. Memphis, I think, after DeBonta's off the board and Peterson's off the board, Memphis takes the clear three. And Boozer, to me, I thought he was the clear three.
And my favorite pick in the draft is the four. So
okay, so and then Caleb Wilson goes four.
I
love Wilson.
I know he was hurt a little bit at Carolina. He's actually a little taller than Boozer. I think he's a better shooter. I think he's a better athlete. I think he's a guy that can get you buckets. I think he's I think Boozer's limited with one hand. I'm not trying to insult Boozer, but I do see a little bit of Marvin Bagley with him, like someone that may not be a star. Maybe he will be, and you know, maybe. But his father wasn't exactly a superstar either, so I'm not going to go nuts with that. I love what the Bulls did get Wilson for. I thought that was a great move for me personally. I think Wilson has. I watched games down the stretch against Duke where they didn't have the talent, and they beat him basically going to Wilson, like possession after possession. And he had big shot after big shot. Saw him when he was healthy, and I really liked the kid a lot.
Okay, well, we're only going to go a couple more. So the five, the Clips took Keaton Wagler. Any issue with that pick, Darren?
I thought Acuff is better.
We're going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Then with the six, the Nets go Mikael Brown Jr.
I know Shag, one of our guys, was all over the fact that Acuff didn't go six.
And then the seven is where Acuff goes to Sacramento.
Sacramento,
right. So that's where the six, the Nets are up. Acuff is on the board. Darren, you didn't seem to have a problem. One of our buddies, Shags, thought that the Nets should have went Acuff.
Listen, I think Acuff's better than Brown before we get into it. The reason why I understood why they went Brown is because they went with a couple of point guards last year that were pure point guards, which kind of what Acuff is, guy that needs ball in hand. They went with Demon last year. They went with Traore, who's 18, and we don't know what he is. So we'll see what happens. But with they get out of Michael Brown as a shooter. They get someone that actually is streaky as hell, but when he's on, can light it up. And I think they wanted to sit there and have a little more diversification than having two guys that need the ball in their hands. I still would have went Acuff, much like Shag, but I didn't have a problem with Brown. Gino, your hands up.
So I did not talk to Shag at all about this. I didn't even comment on that text, but I was completely in agreement with him. I don't know how they did not take Acuff at that pick. I don't care what you have. Acuff is going to be a dynamic score in this league. I'm sorry. I do. You know what? You know who he is? He's freaking Iverson. I'm telling you right now. He's going to put 25 on the board a night, and the Nets are going to be like, oh, my God, how did we not take this guy? I mean, seriously, I think he's going to be that good, seriously.
Well, you guys remember me from when we went to AC, and I talked up Acuff.
You did.
I talked about Acuff all year long last year.
You did. I know.
I love Acuff. I know why they did it for the size, because they didn't want to have the smaller guard. Yeah. We're talking about an inch and a half. But in the NBA, they make it like it's a foot and a half. Because Acuff's what, 6'2", and Brown's 6'3 and a half, 6'4 maybe. You know what I mean? But I get why they did it. But I would have went with Acuff as well. Not as adamant as you and Shag. But Kev, thoughts on it?
I understand, like you, Darren, I understand why they went Brown here. But I would have taken Acuff. Acuff just seems like such a better pro prospect than Brown. And not that Brown's going to be bad. You know, don't get me wrong. But to me, I'd go more of the sure thing. And I don't care what your positions are, especially since you really don't know about Denham and Traore, what they're going to really turn out to be. So I go more for the sure thing with Acuff when you need as much as the Nets do.
I agree with you on that. I really thought that I was that there was no way Acuff was getting past him at six. And when he did, I'm like, I get it. I get what they're trying to do. Brown is not necessarily a pure point, even though they call him a point. He's more of a streaky shooter that can light it up, and he's an exceptional athlete and all these things. I just think that Acuff's a shot maker while Brown's a shooter, and I don't know if that makes any sense the way I'm explaining it. I just think Acuff just finds a way to get the ball in the hole, and I think Brown can come off screens and make things happen. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. More interesting to me, by the way, and just the last point on this, was that Morris Johnson Jr. was the first Michigan player to go. Went before – and then now listen, I am not a Landon Board guy. I think he's a douche. There's nothing about him that I find remotely likable. I think he's a bad guy. Ade Mara is 7'3". Thought it was very interesting that – that's what OKC says. We need someone that's going to guard Wemby. So we're going to take the 7'3 guy and put him on the 7'4 guy and see how that goes. I was just surprised Morris Johnson went as high as he did. And I think most draft experts were as well, as he's not getting great grades from anyone that I've seen.
You know, you mentioned that Mara pick. That was from the Clippers.
Yep.
That was from a 2019 trade. That's how far into the future that the Clippers sent these picks over. It was Paul George to the Clippers for a package of picks and two players, Danilo Gallinari. Remember him?
Yeah.
Some guy named Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Oh, my God. Look at that. That's crazy.
And I'm going to give you a little something about the 2018 draft.
I think OKC won that trade.
Oh, no doubt.
I think so.
Just think back to 2018 just for a second, guys, okay? The Knicks get the 9th pick. They select the great Kevin Knox, okay?
Kevin Knox.
The 10 is Mikal Bridges, goes to Philly, and then gets shipped to Phoenix because that's all that happens for Zaire Smith and a future one. The 11 was SGA, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Drafted by Charlotte, went to the Clippers, and then obviously came back to OKC. So OKC is really his third team, by the way, just to be funny. The 17 was Dante DiVincenzo. Now, as much as he's not part of the Knicks, they had to deal him in order to get Cat, right? The 26 was Landry Shamet. Went to Philly, okay? The 33, the most popular one, is Brunson, who went to Dallas, and then the Knicks signed. And the 36 was Mitchell Robinson.
My God.
So the Knicks, and except for the SGA part, which you have to throw in that he was 11 and he's on his third team, the only two guys they drafted were Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson, yet – all these other guys either are on the team or contributed to getting to play on the team. The Knicks did a lot with that 2018 draft, despite drafting probably the biggest bust in the top 10 that year.
Oh, my God.
Kevin Knox out of Michigan.
Oh, my God. Kevin Knox. Wow.
That was the pick. And I saw somebody, you want to laugh your ass off? I saw somebody while they were showing a little bit of highlights of the parade, because I didn't watch the parade. I didn't get a chance to. With someone with a Knox jersey on.
Wow.
And I was like, how much did somebody pay you to wear the Knox jersey?
That's a diehard right there.
Absolutely. He deserved to be at the parade if you were
wearing a Knox jersey. I actually agree with you wholeheartedly.
The Knicks, on the other hand, by the way, have traded out of the first round three times, traded their top pick in the second round, and then in the third night pick took a kid from Spain who's probably not coming over here for 3 years that they don't have to pay. The Knicks are dealing with salary cap issues and trying to retain their players. So the draft, even though it seems like they have all these picks, they're really not doing much with them.
They're picking up what they collected, about 5 or 6 future second rounders, I think.
They're going to own the second round 1 year. It's going to be great.
Hey, everybody trade second rounders. I mean, they're draft capital. They're trade chips. That's what they're going to do in the future.
When we were kids, the draft went 10 rounds. Can you imagine?
No.
The NBA draft went 10 rounds, then it went to 7. Can you imagine?
No.
Nobody in the second – hardly any, I mean, you get Nikola Jokic, you get Jalen Brunson, you get some guys in the second round that are stars. But in the most part, we don't see anybody from the second round even really do anything more than contribute a little bit. Jake?
I do think that the NBA needs to find a better way of dealing with all of the trades that are happening right before or during the draft, because the fact that we know that these picks are being traded and these play, all of these announcers and these kids are putting on hats for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and we know they're not going to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the announcers are saying that the pick is going to Houston, and we know it's not going to Houston. It's, you know, it's starting now to get a little bit really played out. The fact that we know exactly where all these people are going and they know. So why can't the NBA figure this out in real time and tell us? I know the reasons why, but the NBA needs to really fix this so that when this draft is occurring, we know the correct teams that these players are actually going to.
Yeah.
This is getting a little.
NFL does it right.
They do. You're right. If the NFL can do it, why can't they? I mean, come on.
Because the NBA just, I don't know. They got ET running the freaking draft. He looks horrible. Get him off the freaking screen. God damn it. Those freaking ears. God damn it. Anyway, enough about that.
All right. Any other NBA points before we move on, guys?
Nah, not for me.
No. All right. NHL, there were a couple of trades that happened. One of them involved Florida. They traded forward Brady Tkachuk.
Well, they acquired him.
They acquired Brady to go play with his brother from Ottawa for 2026 number 9 and number 25 pick, along with 2029 first round and 2030 second round. Kev, any input on that?
I mean, reunite the Tkachuk brothers here. Well, not just reunite them. This is the first time they're playing together, except for Team USA. But, you know, great trade for the Florida. I mean, getting Tkachuk to go play with his brother. Ottawa made out pretty good with 2-1s this year. They've already moved one of them. The number 9, they moved over to San Jose to get William Eklund and 2 prospects. Yep. So they're trying to replenish already. And, you know, so you had the big trade there. And basically the next day it comes out that their father was elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame. So big doings for the Tkachuk family.
No, and we'll doubt
get to that
about
in a second, because there are other trades you want to get to. I know, Darren, you're interested in one with 2 of your favorite teams involved.
Well, the Flames and the Devils. So the Flames get Simon Nemec and Maxim Siplikov for prospect Etienne Morin, 2026 second-round pick, a conditional 27 and 28 first-round pick. Again, I'd love to tell you, I know if this is a good trade or a bad trade. It's so hard to read the hockey guys to a certain extent. It looks like I think the Devils did well here. I think both players that the Flames are getting are good players. The thing with the Flames is that going into the new arena, they want to be competitive when they get there. So the future picks don't probably mean as much. I think it's a solid trade for both teams for what they're trying to accomplish on this one.
Yep. And then you had a couple of other ones. St. Louis gets number 16 this year. Restricted free agent Conor McMichael and the prospect. Washington gets Jordan Carew.
Yep. It was a hell of a player.
He's a top six forward that the Capitals want. And, you know, it gives them a little insurance. You know, that I don't know if they know for sure what Ovechkin's doing yet.
No, absolutely. And Carew is definitely a guy that that'll help them offensively.
Yep. I think Buffalo flees Chicago here. Buffalo gives up Bowen Byram and Jordan Greenway. And Buffalo gets numbers 4 and 45 and Louis Crevier.
Yep.
You get the fourth pick in the draft for
a solid but not spectacular defenseman in Byram. And Greenway, who's a nice physical wing, I think Buffalo won this trade handily.
It's a fleecing. I don't know what Chicago's doing.
No, I'm not
they're,
sure.
They're just trying to waste early part of his career here.
Let's talk plus minus, Gino.
And the last one was a sign and trade. Washington gets Alex Tuch in a sign and trade, gives him 8 years and $84 million, and Buffalo gets a third rounder for their trouble.
Yep. Also, Tampa Bay got dealt Reddish to Toronto for a fifth round pick, and they signed him to an 8-year contract right away up in Toronto. And then the Flyers and Leafs traded goalies. We had Wolf or Erskine with Benoit and Andre. That was like later last week. I don't know if we touched on it.
So oh, okay.
But yeah, those were the moves this week. I think that Ottawa did pretty well in the trade. Brady Tkachuk, he's got to win something at some point before you sit there and anoint him as a great player. But we'll find out. We'll find out what happens for them. Florida will be a very physical, nasty team to play against, and a fun team to watch when they're not playing against your team.
Yep,
it's true.
And then we had the Hall of Fame. You know, like you mentioned, Tkachuk already 538 lifetime goals. I think 35th on the all-time list. Three guys who spent their whole careers in one place: Patrice Bergeron from Boston, 1,040 points, Stanley Cup winner in 2011, six-time Selke winner. Always known as one of the best defensive forwards in hockey, as well as being able to get enough points to be effective two ways.
Oh, absolutely!
And then two goalies with almost identical stats here: Carey Price from Montreal and Pekka Rinne from Nashville. Price 361 wins, 49 shutouts. A Vezina, a Hart, and Olympic gold. And Rinne had 369 wins, 8 more, 60 shutouts, 11 more. He won the Vezina, but no Hart in the Olympic.
The thing was, I never watched Pekka Rinne and said, wow, I'm watching a Hall of Fame goalie. I know he's got the stats, and I know that it's hard when you don't watch a hockey team every night because it's not a sport that we get a lot of. And I probably know the least of, out of all the sports about hockey Hall of Famers. But I never sat there and said, ooh, I'm watching Hall of Famer Pekka tonight. I think of Price. I think of Patrick Waugh. I think of Brodeur. I think of great, like, legendary goalies. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm right and they're wrong in it. I never sat there and said, wow, we got to go to the game. Pekka Rinne's playing tonight.
He's a Don Sutton of
He's a really good goalie. I mean, you know, he stole a series here and there in the playoffs. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe, you know. Maybe Gino's brother and sister-in-law would feel different as huge Nashville fans.
All right. Let's head over to baseball before we get there. Kev, you got some hidden gems for us?
Yep, a couple of baseball-related ones here. The Tigers called up Trey Cruz over the last week. He's the son of Jose Jr. and the grandson of Jose Cruz Sr. So they become the fifth three-generation family in baseball history, joining the Bells. No, very famous Bells, you know, Gus, Buddy, and the two sons, David and Mike. Mike had 22-game cameo, but, you know, David had a longer career.
David played.
Yep. Boones, you know, Ray, Boones. Bob, and Brett and Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite, Aaron Boone.
I hate Cashman more.
The Colemans. Joe P., who was a pitcher in the 40s and 50s. Joe H., who spent 15 years. And then Casey Coleman was part of the Four Seasons. So they are a three-generation family. And the Hairstons. Sam, who played mostly Negro League, but also was the first black player for the White Sox in 51.
Mm-hmm.
He had two sons, Jerry and John, who both played. and Jerry's two sons, Jerry Jr. and Scott, more recently. Wow. So those are the.
I remember the father and the, and both sons. So yeah, that's how old I am.
Yeah, we've seen most of these players. We've seen most of them, at least the fathers.
We've seen them start off and retire.
We did catch Jose Cruz Jr.'s career, most of it, or W yes, senior.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. He was a good Astro. He was, winding down when the 86 came by. But he was the leader of that team. Him and Enos Cabell when they lost to the Phillies in what was it 80? Yeah, he was the leader on that squad.
Colorado and Boston on Monday. Colorado wins on a walk-off 3-2. Okay, think of the score here. Jake McCarthy, the walk-off triple, bases clearing triple. First time that's happened in 20 years. But more interesting, the last 8 Colorado Rockies all had hits. Interesting was one out in the 8th inning, Julian singled, Moniak singled, Castro singled, but Julian was out at home for the second out of the inning. Freeman singled, and Castro was out between second and third. So 4 straight hits, but 2 outs.
Oh, my God.
Go to the 9th inning. Rumfield singled, Goodman singled, Carrick singled to load him up, and McCarthy's triple to end the game.
Wow.
So going back to at least 1961, that's as far back as the Lions could go as of the other night, they have not found another instance where a team had their last 8 players all hit.
Wow.
All get hits.
That is pretty freaking awesome.
Of course, it took 2 innings for the Rockets to do it.
That is crazy. Oh, my gosh.
Yep. And then Saturday night, unfortunately, a little history. Bryce Harper hits for the Cycles. Kyle Schwarber hits 3 home runs against the Mets. First time teammates have hit those numbers since the only time it was ever happened was Tony Lazzari hit for the Cycle, and Lou Gehrig hit 4 home runs back in June 3rd, 1932. Thank you very much, New York Mets.
I wish you would have given that to me as a question because I actually saw that one. Damn. And you said who did it, I would have gave you Tony Lazzari and Lou Gehrig, and you would have not known what the hell happened.
That would have been awesome. That actually would have been pretty cool.
Yep. So those were a couple of my gems I found this week.
Okay.
That'll leave me right to the Mets.
Go ahead, Kev. Why not?
Do you want an intro?
Nah.
Mets are just 34-45.
11 games under. 2-6. They're down 2 runs in the bottom of the 8th here tonight. Game 2, maybe they're gonna be 2-7 since taking 2 out of 3 from Boston. I mean, Boston, from Atlanta, the Braves. Mm-hmm. I'm showing my age if I think of the Boston Braves, aren't I?
Yes.
A little bit, but I'm going to show your age in a little while. Don't worry about it.
Lindor back, so of course Soto gets hurt with a bad back. You know, we'll see how long he's out for. You know, these two can't just play together nicely. But my goodness, this stinks. You know, you look at MJ Melendez getting all sorts of playing time. He's hitting 132 in June. Which is an improvement over his 128 in May. Well, we keep running him out there because he's the left-handed side of the platoon. Jared Young, since coming off the disabled list, is hitting 197. He's a perfect cleanup hitter to protect Juan Soto. Eric Wadman, why is he on the team? Simeon, we knew he was terrible offensively. He's proven it. He's hitting 213. Beatty and Vientos, I don't know what happened to them this year. Vientos, you know, at least last week or two, when he's had a chance to play, has had a couple of home runs. But, you know, Beatty's just been – he's had something up his, you know what, this whole year. Pitching-wise, Senga's just an abomination right now. Peterson can't pitch.
Can't let him pitch anymore, Kev.
I DFA him. Eat the money.
Yeah, you can't let him pitch. You may feel the same way about Peterson, but definitely Senga.
Yeah. Time to cut him. Time to just – done. And the problem is that, you know, okay, well, you know, let's trade everybody. The problem is there's not much of a trade. We've talked about it the last 2 weeks. There's just not a lot of trade from this major league roster that's going to get you a lot. So let's bring up the kids. Well, you know, look at the two biggest prospects in AAA, Ryan Clifford. You know, we had to make sure we left first base open for him. 72 games, he's got 107 strikeouts and a 200 batting average.
Which is par for the course for the MLB right now, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Nick Morabito looks like a nice player. He's in 260. He's got 24 steals. He looks like a fourth outfielder type from what we've seen. They're the two best hitters down there. Jiwon Bae. Remember him the last four years with the Pirates? He's hit 220 in the major leagues. Our other good hitter down there is Christian Arroyo. He's 31. He's bounced around the majors since 2017. This is what we've got down there in AAA. All right, let's go to the pitchers. All right.
You got a genius that's running your minor league system. No, to be honest, Ewing has come up, and he's a big part of it. You can't take everything away, but I get your point.
Wendinger, he's been okay, you know, but 63 innings, 36 walks, and 10 home runs allowed. That's not going to cut it. We know how bad Tong's been. Thornton needs more AAA time. We know that. And we had two flamethrowers down there in the bullpen, Ross and Lambert. These two combined, 34 innings, 54 strikeouts. Sounds good, right?
Great.
Sounds one. 54 strikeouts, 34 innings, great. They've combined to walk 34 in 34 innings and given up 33 hits in 34 innings.
So the whips aren't that good, is what you're telling me.
Then you go to double A. I was at the Binghamton game Sunday. I look up every batter in the lineup to try and hit the Mendoza line. I looked it up. The Binghamton team batting average is 207. Like, all right. Let's see what we got in Brooklyn. I look at Brooklyn, their team average is 197. Where's the hope of this franchise? There is none. It's awful. David Stearns needs to go. David Stearns cannot get out of here fast enough. He has ruined this franchise. He traded away half the prospects last year at the trade deadline. We have nothing to show for that. Yeah, we've got Benjamin Ewing up, and that's about it from the farm system. I don't see much else on the horizon. This is a bad major league organization. This is a bad minor league organization. This is just a bad organization right now, period. And it starts with what David Stearns has done over the last 2 years. And I'm done with him. And guess what? The rest of the season, yeah, we'll cover the Mets here and there, but you know, we'll talk about what they do trade off. But it's tough.
You guys will all find out in the next few minutes how much Kevin has written off the Mets, because his World Cup coverage is going to be second to none. I'm not exaggerating. World Cup is giving Kevin the distraction he needed. Though for Father's Day, went with his son and daughter and wife, and he went to watch the Mets minor league affiliate up in Binghamton. So he is still a fan.
And even that, my daughter loves Francisco Lindor. Friday night they announced, okay, Lindor's going to be starting his rehab Friday in Binghamton. He's going to play Sunday, so we get tickets for Binghamton for Sunday. Oh, we're going to move into Syracuse. Thanks a lot, Mets.
Mets are the best.
And then to top it off as an organization, Monday night, how bad the weather was Monday night?
Brutal.
35 minutes before the game, they cancel it?
They don't care about the fan.
All right. I'm done, finally.
Get off my lawn.
That too. But I tell you, World Cup means Letang have become buddies here.
Okay.
I don't have as much to say on the Yanks, Gino.
Yankees are at 48-31 now after tonight's win. 6-4 in their last 10. They have won two in a row. They have a 3.5 game lead on Tampa Bay in the East. They now have the best record in the American League. Oswaldo Cabrera is now up for McMahon, who was placed on the IL. JC Ascara is back up here because Ali Sanchez was put on the IL. Not on the IL, but he was placed on leave for paternity leave.
Yep.
Paul Goldschmidt has found the fountain of youth. He's now hitting 300 with 14 home runs and 39 RBIs.
A couple tonight.
Volpe is up to 273. Caballero playing third base is at 256. And all of a sudden, the bullpen is not so bad. other than someone named Mr. Duvall. Darren, any thoughts?
No trust in his bullpen. I don't know how you can even throw that out there. Ben Rice has been the guy. And the Rice-Bellinger combination has been outstanding with Goldschmidt in between. It really has been. Schlittler has become the best pitcher in the American League at this point. He's the Cy Young leader right now. It doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
Who cares? Yeah. But he's been unbelievable. And you feel like when this rotation is ready and everybody's healthy, to face Schlittler, Cole, Fried, and Rodon, if everybody's healthy in the playoffs, the Yankees have a chance in any series that they're going to play. I'm going to throw this at you, Gino. It's an odd thing I'm going to say because it's not a guy I like particularly. But because of a hole that's been with the Yankees, okay, there's a player that is completely disgruntled at a position of need for the Yankees that plays for the San Francisco Giants named Rafael Devers, who the Giants will probably eat a decent chunk of his contract for because they want him out. He refused to come out for a pinch runner in the ninth inning the other night. He gave anybody touch him. I saw it. Is he a guy, if you could get on the cheap, would you put him at third?
Yes.
With our ballpark?
Yes, but you got to tell me what on the cheap means.
I don't know what on the cheap means, to be honest. Okay. I wouldn't give up any major league ready player. I wouldn't give up any of my top minor league players. I wouldn't give up anything higher than a 15th prospect in the organization for him.
Okay, because
they don't want to go deeper than that. I'm sorry, Kev.
Okay, because that's
Would San Fran not take much back if they don't have to pay any of the contract down?
They probably wouldn't take anything back. You know, they wouldn't need anything back. But I think that the Yankees could probably get a little bit of both. I think they can have San Francisco eat some of the contract, and I think that the Yankees don't have to go deeper than 15, and they're maybe 10, the highest, in their minor league.
So my answer is yes, I would take him back. But all of these bigger names from the minor leagues cannot be in this deal.
Oh, LaGrange can't go anywhere in any of the other big names either. I agree with you.
Well, I agree, but LaGrange, Lombard cannot be in this deal for Devers. None of the pitchers on the major league roster currently cannot be in this deal. Unless
Will
you told
Warren,
me,
I toss. I'd even toss. Well, that, and, if I had to.
Well, and that's it. Unless you're telling me it's Heal or Warren, but that's about it. You know, other than that, I'd take them to play third base, sure.
I just think that it might be a position of need, you know, I that we have to an extent. Nothing against Ryan McMahon, but, you know, he's going to finish with 20 homers probably, but he's going to hit 210. Yeah.
So here's the only thing I would really like this if Judge was here and healthy.
Of course, I agree with you.
A leader in the clubhouse, Devers, you know, basically when he gets here, Judge is here, you know, hey, this is how we're doing shit here. I don't want none of your bullshit. You know what I mean? Like without Judge here, who is that guy? Stanton's on the IL. He's not that guy. Who's that guy?
I don't know if it's Bellinger. I don't know what his personality is. I don't know if it's Goldschmidt. I don't know what his personality is. He's only been here a couple of years. I don't know the answer. I don't know.
No, I know. Without knowing, for some reason, I feel like it's Gerrit Cole.
It could be.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's a pitcher, not a position player. But for whatever reason, I feel like that's the guy. But listen, I would take him. Yeah.
Again, you know, with our ballpark, with that short porch, I have to like his at bat in the bottom third, not bottom third, but the bottom half of the lineup. I think he could be somebody special for us.
I would be willing to deal with the attitude and the issues. Yes.
Well, we'll see. Kev, do you think that leadership is a major problem with the Mets besides Stearns in the clubhouse? Do you think the clubhouse has anything to do with these problems?
I don't think they have a leader.
It's the point. Lindor doesn't seem to be the guy.
No.
Soto doesn't want to be the guy.
No.
The guys that were leaders were the guys they dealt, like Nimmo, like Alonso to an extent, even though Alonso was a little mercurial and not always, you know, available. Not always present, but it seems Nimmo, like Nimmo, I think Nimmo was one of those leaders. But I don't know. I just think that what Gino brings up is so important because locker room is important for a team that's doing well.
Right. And you can't capture that in analytics.
Nope, exactly. And the fact is we just saw it with the Knicks. 1 to 10, are they the most talented team in the NBA? No, but they all loved each other. They all did what they had to do. They won a title. It means something. So I think it's a great point, Gino.
I mean, how many different guys stepped up in that case? And, you know, I don't see that happening on the Mets.
Exactly.
I see that happening on the Yankees because they lose Judge and they haven't missed a beat yet.
Not really, no. Not at all.
Getting close to the All-Star break. One just guy I want to bring up with stats, Jacob Mizrowski right now. 93 innings he's pitched. He has 138 strikeouts and 23 walks in 93 innings. He's given up 18 runs, 15 earned runs, 18 total runs. He's only 8-3. How is that possible? Is my problem. That's my only problem. He's 8-3. I'm like, come on, really?
It's crazy.
As we get deeper into the summer, we'll look at more of the baseball stats. So, any other baseball points before we move on, guys?
The one thing I just see today in the standings. Oh, I was gonna say just in the standings, they brought it up. Realize Milwaukee now has a bigger lead in the Central than the Braves do in the East.
Yeah. The Phillies have been. It's crazy. And the Yankees, by the way, going into last night, because I did this a little early, have 111 run differential plus.
Yeah.
The next closest team in the American League going into last night was the Seattle Mariners with plus 18.
Yeah.
The only other team in the American League with a plus differential is Tampa, which was plus 7. Wow. And the Yankees has increased. I think Seattle won last night. I know they won last night, so that increased, but they're losing today. And I don't know if Tampa Bay still plus. That's how tough the American League has been. The National League has been the stronger league this year with more consistent teams. Milwaukee and I think the Dodgers both have higher run differentials than the Yanks do right now. But it's very interesting stuff.
Milwaukee's at plus 122, and the Dodgers are at plus 143.
Yep, those are the two top, and then the Yankees at third.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Darren, you got some buried treasures for us?
I do. We're going to do a couple of baseball ones. Cam Schlittler, all right, had a dominant performance against Cincinnati last week. Just dominant, right? Do you know he's the only pitcher in Major League Baseball history to have a scoreless start with 12-plus strikeouts and zero walks in both the regular season and the postseason? No one else has ever done that. I was stunned by that stat. I did not expect it. But he was dominant against the Reds, but there was a series actually they lost. He was the only bright spot. Quick second point, the Major League prospects are doing things at the MLB Combine. And for you got a lot of young stars out there. For instance, 17-year-old Rocco Maniscalco, Norwegian kid. He just threw 97 miles an hour on a ground at a shortstop to first base. He threw a 97-mile-an-hour throw from short to first. I don't know if I've ever seen. And when I watched it, you can tell it was 97 miles an hour. Wow. It was freaking ridiculous. So here's the last point, and it's kind of an interesting one. And, you know, we're going to go back to one of Kev's old teams from back in the day. In 1884, Old Hoss Redbourn.
Oh, Old Hoss, yes.
He had an amazing season for the Providence Grays, who Kev has followed closely since his time up in the Greater Canada area. He threw 678 and two-thirds innings that year and won 60 games. Records that'll never be touched, right? He struck out 441, had the ERA of 138. He did start 73 games and won 60 of them, right? What happened was his teammate, the other star pitcher, Charlie Sweeney, left the pitch for the Union Association, one of Geno's favorite teams back in the day. So Redbourn knew he was the only good pitcher on the team. So he made a management an offer. Meet my contract demands, which I couldn't find out exactly what they were, unfortunately. And I'll pitch basically every game. So he started 40 of the last 43 games. He won 36 of them. Carried them to a 20-game winning streak. And also pitched all three games in the 1884 championship series against who, Kev?
The Highlanders?
The New York Metropolitans.
Wow.
That was for you. They swept it and won the crown. And as cool as this all is, amazing as it is, not the most famous thing from Hall of Famer Big Hoss Redbourn. There was an old picture in 1886. They was taking a picture of him, and he extended his middle finger while being photographed. This is widely considered the first time anyone has ever made that gesture on camera. And that is the story of Hall of Famer.
Oh, my God.
Charles Old Hoss Redbourn.
That's great.
I saw that story and I had to dig into it. I just couldn't find out the contract demands. I was like, Jesus, that's crazy.
Great
anyway,
job.
And those are my points. My
bad. Right. Yep. One last baseball point. I think the Mets have the fielding cycle tonight.
Oh, God. Oh, I don't want to hear it.
Bichette at third, Lindor at short, Simeon second with two, Vientos at first with two. That's six infield errors in game two tonight.
Vientos is the best. I don't know why.
But Mr. Run Prevention, Simeon's got two.
Oh, my God.
I'm just saying, the butcher known as Vientos.
Yeah, you expect it.
You don't expect Simeon. You really don't, actually.
Six.
Only the Mets. Goodness. Six infield errors tonight.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
All right, end of rant again.
All right. Let's head over to the soccer pitch.
Oh, thank God for soccer.
Kev, you got some World Cup updates for us, Kev?
I might have one or two here. Team USA, 2-0, first time in history. They've won Group D. Their third game is meaningless in a good way. That has never happened.
No.
And they play tomorrow night, right?
They play tomorrow night against Turkey.
All four guys with a yellow card will not start this game because they don't have to.
As well they shouldn't. I would start Pulisic. I don't know if they made that decision yet. I would start him and play him in half, though.
I don't know if I'd even start him, but I'd bring him in as a sub late, but that's just me. But either way,
okay. I'd make sure he gets in there. But last week, 2-0 over Australia, another great first half. They got the early on goal, second straight game. In their World Cup history, this is the fifth own goal for the U.S. Only France has benefited from more own goals in World Cup history.
The most famous one, by the way, for the U.S. was 94 when they played against Colombia.
Yes.
And that's how they advanced. They got the own goal, and then that guy eventually got murdered. The Escobar guy that I don't know if it's, some say it was because of that, some say it was because of a drug thing, but I watched the two Escobars 30 for 30, and they were all over the place with that. But yeah, that was the most famous one. But yeah, fives is amazing.
And then Alex Freeman in the 43rd minutes, a couple of minutes after he got banged with the head and all, they checked him for concussion. Son of Antonio Freeman, he puts a beautiful one in. So great first half. The second half, I felt like Australia changed the game to Australian rules football a little bit.
Very physical.
Very, very physical. U.S., they got a couple of the yellow cards in the second half, but I think they, for the most part, held up pretty well against the physicality of Australia. Wasn't their best half of the four halves they've played, but it was good enough, and they held on for a 2-0 win. And like I said, as it turned out later in the night, that was enough to give them the Group D win. The reason they got the win was because Paraguay beat Turkey 1-0. But what's interesting here is Paraguay played the entire second half down a man. Almirón got the red card for covering his mouth as he was talking to an opponent. That's a new rule to try to eliminate stuff that's said under the breath, hidden and everything else. It's an automatic red card. What do you think of the rule, Darren?
It's the stupidest rule I've ever heard in my life. You're going to get... Well, Zava, or Zlatan Ibrahimovic, however you want to refer to him, because that's who he was based off of in Ted Lasso. But he was going nuts about the fact that you used to just be able to curse at somebody and go nuts. And now you can't even cover your mouth and you get a red card. I think a red card's a bit extreme. I think a warning might be something you might want to say to somebody. Almirón, also probably the most gifted offensive player for Paraguay, if not the most gifted offensive player for Paraguay, holds a lot of their offensive records. And to pull him out of that game is just the silliest thing in the world. And, but Turkey, as you corrected me last week, has yet to score a goal in this tournament. And, You know, they couldn't do it 11 on 10 in the second half against a Paraguay team that was dominated by the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, shots were 32-7, but they only put 5 on net.
Yeah.
You got to shoot better. I mean, the whole night they kept shooting wide and high and wide and high and just couldn't put one on frame and make the goalie make too many saves. 5 saves is all it took for the shutout. I think my biggest problem with that red card was the reaction of the Turkey guy. You know, as soon as Almiron covers his mouth, the Turkey player is like, look what he's doing, look what he's doing. Yeah. Like a second grader tattletaling on a fellow student.
Well, this is a sport of diving and embellishing all night. That's what it is now.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see tough guys running through hits. They fall in the box and hope for the penalty kick every chance they get. And that's what they're trying to reward in soccer. And that's what Zlatan was saying. He was irate about how soft the sport has gotten. And the Uruguayan coach, I know we're not on them right now, talking about we're playing 4 quarters instead of 2 halves with these breaks. Now there's another TV timeout. He goes, it's not good for the sport. It's not good for football or soccer for us. And Zlatan was all over that. He was not happy. He's not happy with the way the sport is changing. For us, we don't – I mean, you guys watch it a lot more than I do on a regular basis. I mean, I do follow it, but you guys are really much more into EPL and stuff like that. I haven't noticed as many of the changes as I guess the old school soccer guys have or the football guys have. But wow, he was very adamant. He's not retired that long.
No, like I said, I think the diving is out of hand. You know, it almost looks like LeBron or Shai could go on Team USA and draw a couple of fouls.
When Rooney was the forward for England, and he would just kind of try to run through people. He wasn't diving for anything, you know. No. It's a little different now.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's how the U.S. won Group D. Like you said, Gino, they're playing Thursday night against Turkey.
We still don't know how good Freeze is. He's really not been tested yet, and that's the question mark that all three of us had for this U.S. team going into this tournament is – I'm nervous that we're going to not find out until we're in an elimination game. But we need to see Freeze rise to the occasion. I'm a little nervous about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
No, I mean, at this point, I'm sorry. At this point, you're not going to see him get tested till next round. Obviously. So
you might not even play tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You're definitely not going to see him get tested at all. So,
I mean, great chance tomorrow night to let the guys who haven't played much play. Mm-hmm. You never know when they're going to need them later on in the knockout stage. So great chance to play a lot of different players tomorrow night.
I agree. They don't have a lot of depth at midfield. And with Tyler Adams not playing, it'll test that depth a little bit.
Yep. The other big game tomorrow night will be the Paraguay-Australia. A tie probably puts both through. Australia right now has the edge on goal differential. A win by either one guarantees the one through, and the other one would be in trouble, depending on how the other three seeds or third place teams work out. So I was going to quickly run through the groups here. And Darren, if you have any comments, just jump in. Group A is going on tonight as we speak. Mexico already won the group with a couple of wins. South Korea is in second. Czechia and South Africa are on the outside looking in. Basically, unless Czechia or South Africa are able to pull off a win here, they're done. And it's going to be Mexico, South Korea, 1-2.
South Korea has been impressive, I thought, so far in this tournament. Mexico is one. They haven't been dominant yet, but we'll see if they have their best soccer ahead of them.
Yep. We won't know tonight. You know, they're scoreless against Czechia as we speak, but that's like a meaningless game for them. Group B's done. Switzerland beat Canada 2-1 to win the group. Canada finishes second, and Bosnia with the win against Qatar finishes third. Bosnia is probably through. 4 points seems to be the magic number to guarantee getting through.
Looks like
The biggest thing for Canada by losing tonight, their round of 32 and round of 16, instead of being possibly in definitely in Canada, now they'll play their first round of the knockout in LA. And it could be against South Korea. And with the Korean population in L.A., it could be a very pro-Korea crowd and anti-Canada crowd that night.
Well, listen, let's be honest. If U.S. plays Mexico in the United States, we're generally the the underdog in those, with the crowd in those matchups too. So it happens.
Yep. Group C, Brazil and with a couple of easy wins over Haiti and Scotland. Morocco with the win over Scotland and Haiti. So the two of them finished tied for first. Brazil goes through on goal differential. Mm-hmm. Scotland is third with 3 points and minus three goal differential. They need help.
Yeah, and the thing is, Scotland's been the most fun team, fun fan base. Besides, them and Norway have been the two best fan bases that have come to this country. Scotland, you see people saying, I don't want to go back. You know, they're loving Boston. They drank them dry, having a great time. And this is no surprise. The number six team in the world and the number eight team in the world advancing with the same exact points, tying each other. Yeah. This was something that was really expected. For the sake of the sport, Scotland, please get through. Let's get to watch them one last time.
Yep. Group B, Germany's won the group with a couple of wins. Ivory Coast is sitting there in second at 1-1. Ecuador and Curacao are tied with 1 point for third. Ecuador really needs to do something against Germany. Otherwise, they could be out. You know, the 23rd ranked team in FIFA could be out. Ivory Coast.
The most disappointing teams in the tournament so far, easily.
Yeah, and if Ivory Coast against Curacao, they should win. But even if they get a tie, they're through.
They beat Ecuador. They beat them straight up.
Yeah. The Ecuador-Curacao match, nothing, but my goodness, what a match that was. The Curacao goalie.
How many saves did he make? It was double digits.
It was the possession was 75% to 25% in favor of Ecuador. Wow. The shots were 27 to 10, including 15 to 3 on goal. But Eloy Room sets the 90-minute game World Cup record with 15 saves. Only one goalie has ever saved more shots in a game. Darren, do you know who it was?
Wasn't it Tim Howard?
It was Tim Howard against Belgium in 2014.
Oh, my God.
So,
Howard was a great U.S. goal. We've had a lot of good ones. Howard might have been the best one.
Yep. So, Ecuador desperately needs a win. Otherwise, they'll be one of the major disappointments here.
Mm-hmm. They were expected to get through.
Yep. Group F, it's three teams in contention here. Netherlands bounced back. They had the tie first. They beat Sweden 5-1. So Sweden's both won 5-1 and lost 5-1. Netherlands gets Tunisia, so that should be an easy win. Since shootout losses go down technically as draws, the Netherlands has set the record 14 straight games unbeaten in the World Cup.
They've never won it. But they invented the triangle offense that Ted Lasso brought out. Anyway, we move on.
Yep. So Japan 4-0 over Tunisia. The coaching change, of course, didn't work for Tunisia.
No, not at all. They've not scored 9-1.
Yep. And that Japan Sweden game is big. The tie helps both.
Japan's very good. Japan's very good.
Yeah.
You know, that's Netherlands got off to a huge start against Sweden. Sweden started to kind of dig in that match, and then all of a sudden cut it to 2-1, and then all of a sudden, or 3-1. And then Netherlands kind of put it away late. Sweden just couldn't get the lucky bounces or the bounces they needed. They actually kind of controlled a big stretch of that match. They just couldn't put it over the top, I thought, after the Netherlands got off to the quick start and the quick finish.
Yep. Group G, Egypt is on top, Belgium and Iran and New Zealand following. This is still wide open. I'm even going to go through the permutations. All four still have a chance to get through.
Yep.
Group H, Spain, with a big 4-0 win. They go up against Uruguay next. Spain looks good to get through. Uruguay, you know, they've had two draws.
They're in trouble. They need a win. And it's not an easy win.
Because Spain plays Uruguay. Spain could probably use a win to make sure they're, you know, if Spain loses and Cape Verde beats Uruguay, all of a sudden Spain's third. So it's a big game for Spain, but Cape Verde, you know, they've got two draws here, and if they're able to pull off a win against Saudi Arabia, which is very doable, you know, Cape Verde could be through to the next round.
And their 40-year-old goaltender played amazing as well, keeping Uruguay out. Uruguay dominated that game, but they couldn't beat them.
Yeah. If they tie, you know, and then their goal differential is zero, we know it's better than Scotland, so that's one of the teams that would be in contention.
I want to see Scotland get through.
And then the other day, Monday, I'm going to group I and J together because this was just incredible. We start off in group J, Argentina versus Austria. Argentina wins 2-0. Messi, both goals. Sets the World Cup record with 18. Breaks, closes record. You know, Argentina scored 5 goals. Messi has all 5.
Yep.
Next game up was France and Iraq. And France wins 3-0. And Mbappe, he gets 2 of the 3 goals. I think what's even bigger there is Dembele scored. He needed to break his World Cup scoreless run. So that's a big one for France. But Mbappe with 16 is now tied for second, just 2 behind Messi. And then to top it off, you know, Norway later in the afternoon, early evening, they get a – that was a fun game to watch, 3-2 over Senegal. And Erling Haaland with 2 goals. So if you keep track at home, that's 5 for Messi, 4 for Mbappe, and 4 for Haaland.
Yep.
And for the record, just to, even though he's playing an extra game, Vinicius Jr. from Brazil has got 4 as well. So the Golden Boots going to be pretty impressive here. And then Algeria in the anticlimactic game beat Austria with a game that nobody was really interested in at midnight. But Group I, you're looking at France and Norway both getting through. They're playing the thing that's Thursday night. Or Friday. That's Friday night.
Friday night because the U.S. is Thursday night.
Yep. Because of goal differential, France needs a tie to win the group. Norway needs to beat France to win the group. But both are getting through. That's going to be with Mbappe and Haaland out there. That's going to be a fun game to watch.
It should very well be.
Group J, Argentina's got the group 1, Austria and Algeria. Tied to 3 points each. They're playing each other. Winner or an Austria tie gets Austria the second seed. Likely, they would have to play Spain. The loser of this group, or loser of the game, or if Algeria somehow gets a tie and finishes third, that probably clinches them getting in there. They would be the third seed, and they would probably play somebody like either U.S. or Egypt or England or Ghana, you know, somebody like that, rather than Spain. Would you rather finish second or third at this point?
Well, you have to, if you're Austria, you have to play for the tie, otherwise you won't qualify.
Yeah. But, you know, if Austria, you know, 3 points may not be enough to get in. So they both have to play for the win. But, you know, the loser, or if it's a tie, Algeria finishing third might get the advantage over Austria finishing second.
Very well could.
Only 2 groups left, Gino. Group K, Portugal 5-0 over Uzbekistan. So that was Tuesday afternoon. But Cristiano Ronaldo says, don't forget about me. At 41 years old, he scores a brace. He gets 2 goals in the first half. And then Colombia comes back and wins over a very game Congo squad, 1-0. I thought that was a very fun matchup to watch. So that leaves Colombia and Portugal with a matchup to determine Group K's winner. If Congo can somehow beat Uzbekistan, that would give them 4 points and put them in pretty good position to move on as well. So little Congo can maybe move on.
I'm going to give Gino some smelling salts when you're done.
And last but not least, Group L, we've got 3 teams, England, Croatia, and Ghana, playing for 2 spots, basically. England's got Panama, so I think England should be through. Croatia, Ghana, big game.
Yeah, winner's through.
Winner's through. A tie probably gets both through.
Agreed.
So that takes us through the next couple of days. This round, the third set of games will be done Saturday. We open up Sunday with the A2 versus B2. So we know Canada's playing Sunday in LA. We don't know who they're playing against yet. We'll know that tonight. And then it's three games a day for the next 5 days as you get through the round of 32.
It's going to be some fun stuff.
Way too many damn teams.
One thing I'm going to say about this, the stars have come out in this tournament, and Kevin mentioned it already. So you got Messi with 5 goals, Mbappe with 5, Haaland with 4, Undav from Germany's got 3, Manzabi from Switzerland has 3, Jonathan David from Canada has 3, Ronaldo with his 2, Salah, he only has 1, but it was a really big goal and turned the tide against New Zealand, which was kind of a fun match as New Zealand jumped out. That's what we want to see. We want to see these superstars putting the ball in the net, and they are. when you watch these third games and a lot of starters are sitting, you see a lot of 0-0, 1-0 kind of crap. You don't really see anything. But what you want to do is see the stars. And I think we were kind of blessed to have that. So it was really cool.
Yeah. We were on something a while back, and we need to get back on this train. They need to have a second referee out there.
I agree.
Yep.
I'm saying it forever. Hockey can do it, so can soccer. You need to have two people that are watching this stuff really closely.
One guy can't watch everything that's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just too much stuff.
I'm not saying to have a second guy out there calling fouls. I want the second guy out there realizing that this guy dove. And he doesn't deserve to get a foul.
Well, whatever, but there needs to be another set of eyes out there.
Yep.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I've thought that way for a long time in this sport.
Unless they're going to give a whole lot more leeway or involvement with the side judges there, that rather than just holding up a flag for all sides.
They got to be able to do a little bit more than that, I think.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But they're line judges. They're not really involved the same thing as they are in hockey. Let the second referee help.
Right. Yeah.
They'll learn how to manage a game together. It'll work.
Yep.
We had the ref that had the cramps last week because he's running more than the players are, you know? He's getting stretched out there on the field. I mean, you know, these guys have to be in impeccable shape to be a referee in soccer.
I mean, you watch, you know, as they go back and forth, you know, some of these special – when it goes down to the defensive zone, some of these forwards hang back. They're walking. They're, you know, sort of conserving energy. The referees are back and forth.
They are. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Is that it for soccer?
That's it.
I got a couple of quick things. College baseball just to announce that Oklahoma Sooners win the national championship in the best of three over the North Carolina Tar Heels. They blew them out in game three. Nothing really climactic. The remarkable part was that OU finished 11th in the SEC during the regular season with a 14-16 record. They were do or die down 8-2 to the second-ranked team in the country, Georgia Tech. Stormed back and won the bracket. Outscored Georgia Tech 21-7 from that point on in the two games. Went on to Super Regional, crushed Kansas 21-3. Then they beat the only top eight seeds in Omaha, winning 10 of their last 11 games. SEC has now won 7 straight national championships. Kevin, I know how proud you are. Oklahoma before that, LSU, Tennessee, LSU again, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Vandy. They just seem to dominate the sport right now. While we're on college, just real quick, NCAA votes to grant FCS teams to go into FBS in football and immediately have access to bowl games and the playoff. This only affects North Dakota State and Sacramento State. And as Gino always likes it, when Sacramento State plays in the Mid-American Conference. So they should be in the middle of Ohio. They should be all the time. North Dakota State will be in the Mountain West. Also, the NCAA came out with the 5 seasons. They've ratified the 5 seasons to complete your 5 years. So you can play up to 5 years. You can do it over 5 seasons. You can do it over 5 years. Basically allowing players to almost play forever. We won't have anyone under the age of 24 ever playing college sport again, probably is the way it looks with that. One last little quick point. So Darren Peterson, who we talked about, and all three of us seem to be a little questioning on his, his want to and love of the sport of basketball, second pick of the draft. He actually set a record with his brother this year, Daryl Peterson, was an undrafted free agent by the Rams. They're the first brothers to enter the NFL and NBA in the same season.
Wow.
So that's a little something different. Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, Darren, D-A-R-R-Y-N, are the two brothers, and there we are. I think that's all I got, though. I don't know if you have anything else. Kev's got something.
We've mentioned them the last couple of weeks, so with the Brandon Sorsby.
Oh, yes, so, absolutely. NFL.
NFL decided they will not hold a supplemental draft this year, so Sorsby is in limbo and sort of can't do anything until the draft next year.
Yeah, he is not allowed to play back at Texas Tech. He's not welcome anywhere. Listen, he gambled on the sport. I don't know why this is such a big freaking surprise.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, Brandon, so listen, as a Jet fan, I'm glad. I don't want to have the risk of wasting a first-round pick on a guy that already had questionable character. Yeah. But I know the Jets, and I know that they would find a way to jump in on it. You guys have anything else?
No.
During this marathon, 241st episode, we are the Sports Kings from Queens, Darren, Kevin, Gino, Wild, Wacky, World of Sports, where we think we have nothing and talk for an hour and a half. please download the podcast anyway. You get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We post a lot on social media. We're even doing TikTok a little bit now because, you know, we're crazy like that. Please like our stuff. Share it. You don't like it, pretend you like it. Share it anyway. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.